set of algorithms that learns from real world data. And so it learns from examples. Take your shopping habits on Amazon. They use all of your habits and all the things they've collected from you to learn about how you shop, so that they can put all those things at the bottom of the app and website to say, we think you might like these things. It's basically learning from data so that it can make predictions in the future.
Well, what is the most common use presently? What industries or what types of functions is it being used for most commonly right now?
Sure. Yeah. So it's actually shifted recently with this creation of ChatGPT and these large language models. In the past, it would have been things like optimizing inventory or predicting sort of ticket routing in big corporations where you'd have complaints that came in or order placements that came in. And how do we decide which teams need to fulfill these things? So a lot of back-end efficiency type problems where you would see those. The consumers are going to be most familiar with things like Netflix's recommended videos or Spotify's created, generated playlists. Those are some of the things that the everyday consumers are going to be used to. But in the industries, it's more about around back-end efficiency and how we can do things faster, with less turmoil. And so I think, with this new added addition of ChatGPT and these large language models, we're seeing more use cases than ever come up around text generation and customer experience. So things like chatbots on websites and, how can we talk to our customers in a way that sounds more relevant to them. We've all experienced those chatbots of the past that are largely useless, but they're getting a lot better.
Well, I don't know if I've ever been exposed to a chat box. Now, you're probably going to say, oh, yeah, you've had it a dozen times. You just didn't know it. Is that possible?
It is possible. It's typically a website that you would visit, and a little box will pop up in the corner, and it'll say, hi, my name's Ralph. I'd love to help you today.
Oh, I have seen that.
You can type in your question there, and it'll try to figure out what you're asking about and respond. And so sometimes those are real people that it'll connect you to. Most often those are what are called chatbots, and they use AI to go into a knowledge repository and figure out here's the best way to reset your password, or if you'd like to buy Windows today, here's the catalog, the link to our catalog, those kinds of things.
Now, I've been in this business a long time. And, over the years, there have been so many famous disc jockeys, right? We've had, Dick Clark, Ryan Seacrest, Casey Kasem, Howard Stern, and others. Now, I'm not saying all
Dave Ballmer.
Well, not exactly, but all these different people. And I haven't particularly cared for all of their natures, but nevertheless, the audiences have. Now, most of those guys are gone now. One of the thoughts that has just been tinkering around in my mind is, couldn't you take their voice and somehow or other recreate it so it sounds just like them, even have the same personalities in the way of their the stuff they would talk about, and bring them back to life in a live radio show? Now, I'm not proposing to do that, but it just strikes me that could be possible. What do you think?
Yeah, actually, it's more than possible. You could do that right now if you tried. There are actually some open source applications out there on the internet where you can, if you have 10 minutes or more of a particular voice that you'd like to use, you can upload them to these websites, and it'll create a fairly realistic rendering of that voice.
Well, I know you're a busy person, but sometime, if you could send me just an example of that, like over to my email or something, that would be just a hoot to see how it turns out.
Absolutely.
What is okay? So, do you think the rest of your career, your work lifetime, is going to be principally involved in artificial intelligence?
I do, actually. So when I first got started, there really weren't any commercial applications for this type of software. It's artificial intelligence, and particularly machine learning, which is sort of the engine that powers it, has been around for a very long time. And it's sort of been a mathematical oddity, or a playground for mathematicians. And about the time I got into my career is when we started seeing things like Pandora radio stations and Spotify and, you know, these you might like also kind of concepts pop up in some of our consumer applications. And
right.
It's only accelerated from there. And it's honestly, even for someone who's engulfed in it every day, it's sometimes hard for me to keep up with. So, yeah, I don't see it slowing down anytime soon.
There's, Suzanne, she has such an awareness of art and paintings that someone she knows have performed or created, and awards that they win and stuff like that. Now I'm also hearing that AI can participate in art and music and, well, how does that happen? You know,
yeah,
I mean, there's not an AI thing out there with arms holding a brush, is there?
You know, there may be, but that's not what this is referring to.
Okay, so help us out.
Sure. Yeah, it's. I'll tell you, this is a very touchy subject, and it's AI in all creative industry. You know, you've probably seen the writers and actors strikes out in Hollywood. That's partially due to this concept, but. I remember back about a year ago or so, there was an AI art that was entered into a state fair competition, and it actually took first place.
Wow.
And I remember all of the headlines that came out is AI art wins state fair, and artists are furious. And I believe this was in a state in Colorado or somewhere where, you know, artists are flourishing, and there's people all over the place. The way that this happens is that, same with the voice sort of example, these algorithms, which are simply mathematical algorithms, will be able to take in art from all over the world and years past, and not just art, but photographs and all the pictures that we're generating on our phones today.
Wow.
It takes in that information as digital information. So it translates it into the pixels, into some mathematical concept based on, you know, how they chose to do it. And then that algorithm is capable of creating new things based on all of the pictures and art that it's seen and taken in. And so you can actually write a prompt that would be, I saw one earlier this week that said, wanted to generate an image of a baby alligator in a teacup. and it wanted to do it in a cyberpunk futuristic style. And you can be that specific in these prompts, and it'll generate just that. And it might generate three or four versions of that in case you like one better.
It's crazy. I mean, I want to come up and visit your office and have you show me examples. So what about the average person out there? If they did want to see examples and hear of stories of how AI has done this or has done that, are there publications that you would recommend? Are there websites? You know what I mean. Where can someone dip into this a little bit so that they can really have a better understanding?
Sure. You know, there's all the common ones out there that will cover things that are national news or global news. When you see, you know, Tesla's self-driving cars or things like that, you can find those on New York Times or CNN. I subscribe to MIT.
Okay.
I really like the MIT newsletter. They do a great job of boiling some of these things down and making sure that everyone can understand, but that they're still interesting. So that's one that I get into. There's also, believe it or not, there's a handful of AI generated news stories out there that you can subscribe to some of these applications that will curate specific AI news just for you. If you're curious about AI in education over AI in security, say, it'll curate a list of new articles out there just for you.
Wow. Well, that's, you know, all of these things are rather dramatic and everything in my mind, but what if someone, I lost my question, what has been affected, shall we say, on a daily basis in a positive manner that has been assisted by AI?
Some of my background is specific to healthcare, and I'll say, you know, that is an area and an industry that I think has only seen positive influence from this technology. For example, I worked with a couple of partners who had a use case for diagnosing malnutrition in children as they were admitted to the hospital.
Okay.
And so it's a very difficult process, and one that only is really kickstarted when a nurse or a doctor who's treating that child says something and starts the process for getting a dietitian down into the room to do an assessment and all these things. They were able to use artificial intelligence just to gather the information based on the admittance of that child and look through the vitals of the child and some of the information that was coming in. And this algorithm was able to accurately predict, these are the children who need some additional attention and we should dispatch dietitians to them immediately. And the rate of success for that was huge. And I think, you know, it's just one example of how I think artificial intelligence and machine learning is really going to affect the healthcare system for a positive.
Well, what's you know, we think of the healthcare system as being critically important. What you know, go the soft way. Tell me, where is AI going to affect us in something that's not nearly so important?
Sure.
Because it's mind-boggling to me. Now, if you and I live closer together, I'd probably have a better handle on this, but we talk about it in news items. And it just sounds so mysterious and so accurate. And so, like it could almost replace anything. So, what, now I forgot my original question. Jump in.
Yeah, the soft stuff. I think I'll, you know, a few examples are things like, you know, I like to play fantasy football. I know there are a lot of folks out there who play fantasy football, and one of the things that happens after your weekly matchup is over is you'll get this notification that says you won or you lost, and it'll be a neat little write-up of your team crushed the other team by this many points, and these were the key three players who really were star standouts, and that whole summary of the fantasy football matchup between you and your friend or your rival was generated by artificial intelligence. So there's nobody sitting behind a computer somewhere looking at your particular game and writing up what happened. It's summarizing it for you and sending it to you. And I think something like that we'll start to see more often. So
now is your in this game, okay? Are you actually playing someone else, or are you playing another computer?
No, yeah. So fantasy football, you set up with maybe 10 of your close friends, you pick a roster from professional players on all teams. So you can, I have the Browns quarterback and a running back from the San Francisco 49ers, and I make up this team. And each week I go up against one of my other friends, and depending on how those players perform in their actual real life games, we get points that are associated to our team. And so you either score more points than the other person or you don't. And typically these are, you know, there's an office pool or there's some sort of friendly wager. We made one of our friends stand out on a busy street corner with a sign around his neck that said he had lost the league 1 year.
Okay.
Fun things like that.
And, okay, so that's a game, and you wouldn't have to have artificial intelligence to help or hinder. You could simply play it. But AI, engaging it, and if both sides engaged it, how does it still turn out?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And so I think that it's probably less people using AI to help them win in any of these scenarios or win a game or approach a particular thing. I think it's more about the experiences of some of these things will change over time. So, for instance, I mentioned self-driving cars a little while ago.
Oh, yes.
We don't spend a whole lot of time together, but if we did, you'd know I talk about self-driving cars often, and I tend to sort of get up on a soapbox about how I don't think anyone should be driving them. I don't think they're ready yet. The technology isn't quite where it needs to be, nor are our economic and legal systems. But all that aside, we're starting to see self-driving technology in all of our vehicles today. So you might have something in your car called adaptive cruise control. And that means that, you know, we used to be able to set cruise control on 60 miles an hour, and it would just drive 60 miles an hour.
Yes.
Now, if you set it to 60 miles an hour, but someone gets in front of you at two or three car lengths away and slows down, your car will slow down with that car in front of you.
Okay.
And it's a great feature. It uses artificial intelligence to be able to understand where that car is and how fast it's going, so that it can change the rate of speed that your car is going. It's a great feature, but it's coming in waves to say, all right, there's a piece of self-driving technology, and it's not you know, we haven't removed the steering wheel from the car so that it's going to, we just say, take me to work, and it drives me there.
Mm.
Similar with things like your blind spot monitor on your mirrors, and some of these cars now have can parallel park themselves. You know, so there's little pieces and parts are starting to feed into our lives so that we get more used to them, and we don't really even think about them until there's more and more and more of it and less and less and less of our input.
Or mistakes, right?
Or mistakes, yeah. Correct.
Well, so, you know, with studying artificial intelligence as deeply as you have, and you've been doing it how many years? When did you first hear the term artificial intelligence?
Oh, that would have been sophomore year at Worcester, which would have been about 2008.
Holy cow. So you're saying 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, folks, let me just add this a little bit. In my family, the College of Worcester is Mecca, right? And so many of the family members, and my parents, everything, were College of Worcester graduates. And you have been too, right, Jacob?
I am, yeah. Yeah. In my line, so we're all, our family, like you said, has gone there for generations, and we all have a little different people who are associated. I think in mine, I was the 32nd person to go there.
Oh, well, I've never stopped to count, but or tried, but I'll bet you the number's higher yet. Now, anyway, let's move on. So, let's see, what started that? I asked something and you said at Worcester. Help my memory.
We were talking about soft impact to our daily lives.
Okay. So, when did you first realize that something had affected your life that came out of AI?
Yeah, it was interesting. That first class that I had taken was a sort of an introduction to artificial intelligence, and I helped to publish a research paper in undergrad, and got to go to an artificial intelligence conference and present it up on stage, which sort of sparked my interest and has put me on this path. And
yeah,
credit to the professors at that college who got me interested. But I remember being up. So that original paper, that the thing that got me started, was there's another university attached to Ohio State up in Worcester called the OARDC, the Ohio Agricultural Research and Development Center.
Yes.
And they do just fantastic work in agriculture. And we were working with the Department of Students who were growing tomatoes. And they were figuring out how to make them blight resistant and how to make them juicier and look better and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to take cross sections of these tomatoes. So they actually gave us physical tomatoes, which we cut in half and scanned into a computer, just like a scanner you would have that you scanned a piece of paper into. And we had a piece of software that could identify the attributes of that tomato, so the circumference, the radius, the angles at the top and bottom, all sorts of different things about these tomatoes.
Even the compounds?
No, okay. Nothing physical about it, just the dimensions and different things that you could take from the scan.
Okay.
And so we ended up...
I hate to interrupt. Put a year to this.
Sure. This was in 2010.
Okay. Go ahead.
So we were able to create an algorithm that could read in this information. what is the circumference, what is the radius, what are these angles, and predict what type of tomato it is. So is this a beef tomato or a Roma tomato or a cherry tomato, which is, on the face of it, fairly useless, right? I can just look at it with my eyes and tell what kind of tomato it is. But maybe there's some application as a tomato sorter, you know, or something like that in a tomato field. But I got to go present this paper down in, you know, at this artificial intelligence conference. And the presenter who got up on stage right before me had completely revolutionized the import-export industry for his country, which is, you know, at this point I can't exactly remember which country it was, but I remember being awestruck by the application and the ability to change the world that this person had done. And then I was the very next speaker to get up on stage and talk about my tomatoes. So there was a sort of an aha moment there where I realized there's really a whole lot more to this, and we can really do a lot of good here.
Well, you know, we're in the news, information, entertainment business here as a radio station and have been proud to do it for many years. Now, entertainment. You know, everybody's so fascinated with entertainers and entertainment. And how do you think AI is going to affect that industry?
Yeah, it's already having a huge impact. I think some of these movies that have come out, like Avatar or some of these Marvel movies, a lot of the effects in those movies are at least assisted by artificial intelligence, helping to paint the canvas of a planet that doesn't exist, or helping to you know, generate the backdrop of a city that, you know, that would never was. And so artificial intelligence is helping with the experience of generating the effects in these movies already. I think, you know, what we saw with the writer's strike and the actor's strike out in Hollywood is you're seeing this generative capability where, you know, I don't know if your listeners have engaged with ChatGPT or the like, but the...
I can tell you, I have not. I don't know what that's like. So, you know, you need to give me a tip and let me try it. But keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's why. Absolutely. So real quickly, ChatGPT was the sort of kickstart to a lot of these large language models that have come out, which a large language model just means that it's basically consumed all language that it could from the internet, things like Wikipedia and Reddit and Twitter and, you know, what have you, to be able to train itself on how to sound and respond like a person. And so you can ask it anything you want. You can ask it, write me an email to my cousin about some AI topics we can discuss on the radio. And it will write an email that is very eloquent and grammar correct and have that topic and tone.
Wait a minute. I can do that today?
You can do that right now if you wanted to.
Wow. Now... You know, here we are in Athens, Ohio. This, you know, Ohio University. Pretty cool place. Just like Worcester. Now, what's to prevent a student from being assisted from something like that?
So right now, there are a lot of questions around that topic. I think at the moment, there's not really a whole lot to prevent it.
Okay.
And so we saw this sort of trend for higher education going towards sort of digital assignments and you know, homework assignments that were all digital and done online. And I think, you know, there was always an issue of, well, did they find the answers on the internet? Have they plagiarized this answer? is this really their own words?
Yeah.
Some of that was addressed with some software that came out that you teachers could copy paste the student's answer into a box and it would say exactly what website it came from. And so there's been that, but now these are not coming from a website. They're being generated by an artificial intelligence. And it's an interesting prospect, and I'll tell you, it's currently being hotly debated. I know UNESCO released some guidelines around these and how they think it should be approached, but I've seen major universities go all the way to banning these applications on their networks, which in my opinion isn't very effective because a student could just pull out their cell phone that's not on their network and use it anyway. But I think what we're going to see is more higher education figuring out how to utilize these as assistants for students, how to leverage them as tools to help students grow and learn. My opinion, what we've seen in the past is all-out bans typically have the opposite effect. So we need to safeguard, but we also need to learn to coexist.
So if this had been in effect when I was in school, I might have had a higher GPA, right? Oh, well.
It's definitely possible.
Darn. Okay. Well, there's so much. This thing fascinates me. And, okay, so now I've talked about real simple stuff, but it's your turn. Talk about how fascinated you are at what could happen with artificial intelligence.
Yeah, it's definitely a passion of mine. I think, you know, we're on the path to be able to do some things that we maybe never thought possible. And so I think that in terms of things like climate change or, you know, big things, AI is really going to be the thing that gets us there. For instance, I'm fascinated with things in outer space too. So the James Webb Telescope is something that I follow and like to see what comes from that. It is using artificial intelligence to scan the skies and understand what's out there, where planets might be, where stars could be, what it's seeing and interpreting that. It's using artificial intelligence algorithms to help us curate the vast amounts of data coming from there. Things like we recently, NASA used a meteor repelling tool. I don't know if you saw this experiment, but they basically shot a rocket out into outer space and ran it straight into an asteroid to see if they could nudge the asteroid off its trajectory in case that one ever came close to us, like that, like the Armageddon movie.
And was it successful?
It was successful. It was fascinating to see how excited these people who had spent years planning this mission and shooting a rocket and hitting an asteroid out in outer space with this rocket. Mm-hmm. And the only way they were able to do that is with a targeting system and a positioning system that uses artificial intelligence. And so without that, even this prospect of completing this mission would have been impossible. And so I think we're already seeing some of the fascinating things we can do. And in the future, to your question, it's hard to predict. But I imagine it'll transform basically every part of our life.
Wow. What is another topic that just is so important to you? And it could be an entirely different topic. You know, you're involved in so many things, in futuristic things, and your role in Columbus, and the positions you've held before. What is another thing that just rocks your boat?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, I've talked a lot about the fascinating things that can happen with AI. I've talked a lot about what some of the applications are out there and what can be done. One of my biggest passions, though, around this topic is the concept of privacy and protection and, you know, understanding how AI can be used against us.
Yes.
And so one of the things I mentioned early on, the way this works is you take in data to be able to make predictions. And so imagine something like you want to get life insurance. And life insurance is all about mathematical algorithms and how risky you are to insure and how much you can be insured for and all those things. And the data that comes in needs to be labeled. So they could take my information on who I am, what I've done. Have I ever smoked a cigarette in my entire life? Have I ever been in a car wreck? What's my medical history? All of those things. And they can label me a smoker or a non-smoker. And that data set and that label could follow me around in different ways. They could sell that data to a different organization. It could go, you know, into a profile that's on me out there somewhere. And then I could be labeled as that thing that might affect how much life insurance I get or whether or not some of my medical claims are approved or denied.
Right.
You know, certain things like that. And I think it's important for people to understand all of that sounds very scary and ominous, but there are methods and ways to keep yourself protected that are not, you don't have to be in the IT industry. You don't have to understand software. You just have to have, you know, some basic concepts and honestly be educated around it to understand. If you use things like 23andMe or Ancestry.com, those kinds of send your DNA to us and we'll tell you where you're from and who your relatives are, those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. You know, I was adopted, and so they run a DNA sample and then they start matching it. And I probably have a 50 people that it has sent me notice of, that they believe I have some connection with each of them. And then the origins, you know, Ireland and that sort of thing. Fascinating. And have I pursued it with any vigor? Not yet, but I hope to someday. I'm sorry, I got off track.
No, that's it. And I think that's a perfect example of sort of the things I was mentioning, which is, you know, those programs, you sign up front a data agreement or terms and conditions or whatever you want to call them that says that the DNA that you send in to those companies, that they own that data from now to infinity. And it's an interesting concept to think somebody out there owns your DNA makeup, but there's a social trade-off that says, you know what, some people say, who cares, what are they going to do with it, you know, it doesn't really matter, and we want to understand where we came from and get this experience of knowing who our relatives are and what part of the world we're from, and so just as long as people understand, here's the trade-off I'm making and I'm happy to make it, I think that's fine. What I get wary about is when people don't know what they're trading to get their experience. So every app you download or every website you go on, it seems like there's a thing that pops up that says, hey, here's our terms and conditions, or here's our data privacy policy. Hit okay to continue.
And, you know, if you don't, you can't get any further. It is a little bit worrisome. But we still end up doing it often. Well, what do you think is an exciting thing in the future that we've not talked about? Artificial intelligence.
So I did talk a little bit about self-driving cars or autonomous vehicles and how I think they're not ready yet. But in my opinion, that is one of the most exciting prospects of this whole technology. Think about a world where the car, there's no one in front of you that's texting and not going when the light is green, or there's nobody who's not paying attention and going to change lanes and cut you off. None of those things would happen if the entire system transformed. Now, like I said, I think we're a long way from that, less optimistic than some of my counterparts around how fast that'll come. Mm-hmm. But I truly believe that if that ever does come to fruition, it is going to be one of the greatest achievements that we have, where, self-transportation can be safe, and it can be timely, and it can be productive, where right now it seems to be more risky than it used to, in my opinion.
Well, as everything advances, there are risks, of course. Well, keep in touch with me. Let me know if there's something that, pops that you think's really interesting and that the public would enjoy knowing. And how's your family?
Doing very well. We've got two little ones who are going to live in this world as they grow up, and hopefully they've got the education piece figured out by then. But
in their ages?
Doing great. Two little boys, 6 and 2.
Okay, neat. And say hi to your mom, please.
Will do.
Okay.
I have one last thing I forgot to mention.
Please do.
Is that on my LinkedIn profile.
Yes.
LinkedIn, I write a blog called Jacob's Journal, where I just sort of curate information I find out there as I read through some of these sites and some of the blogs and articles that come out and think they're interesting. I curate them together in a way that I think is consumable for people who are interested in this topic. So if you wanted to find out more, you can certainly engage there.
Okay. So give me what would people enter on their machines, I guess?
If they wanted to find me, just type in my name, Jacob Haining, on LinkedIn, and go to my blog, which is Jacob's Journal.
LinkedIn, Jacob's Journal. Okay, I'm writing here. Very good. Well, listen, say hi to everybody, and we'll probably do this again down the road.
Sounds great.
Okay. Jacob, take care now.
Thanks,
Dave. Bye-bye. All right, folks, that was kind of fun. And he is a second cousin, as I was saying. Cool. All right. Well, let's see here. Tomorrow, our topic will be the Mount Zion Black Cultural Center. And where there's, at this moment, I can't tell you exactly who's going to be here to talk about all the restoration project and other things that they have going on. But I promise you, whoever it is, they'll be in the know, and that'll be tomorrow. The Mount Zion Black Cultural Center is our topic tomorrow. Looking ahead one more day, Boone Troyer is going to be joining us. And okay, let me see how I can stop that. I don't know what I'm doing here. Anyway, Boone Troyer will be joining us on Thursday. I think his title is that of Executive Director for Visit Athens County. So those are some shows coming up, and we look forward to all of that. In the meantime, the weather, let me look over here and just hit the update because I haven't done that in the last few minutes. Okay, 53 degrees right now outside our Columbus Road studios. What's the high going to be? 58. So we don't have a whole ways to go. And they say that 58 is going to be between that 3 and 5 p.m. zone. Our low overnight, 39. I don't see any particular mention about precipitation. Let me just double check. No, it looks like it's going to be not particularly rainy or anything like that. Let's see here. What else can we talk about? Today's Tuesday, right? Yeah, I think so. Anyway, I can't think. I ended the show just a moment earlier, and now I'm filling time here. But make sure you listen to our sports show every day at 6, I think it is. And our guys do a great job out there, so please join them, won't you? And, of course, they do live play-by-play of many of our high schools and, of course, Ohio University and different athletics, and it's really a great thing. Okay, we're just about ready here to say goodbye. And once again, October 17th, it's a Tuesday. Folks, be careful out there and go Bobcats, right?
In our 73rd year of serving Southeast Ohio, AM 970 and 97.3 FM.